Welcome to the One Up Project.
Money is fuel that allows you to do things. It doesn't need to be taboo.
What you don't want to do is wake up at 65 realizing you did something you hated and have regret.
Go and find people who will give you advice for nothing.
This is a space for personal growth and money chat with new perspectives every Monday.
This bit of content, listening to this, is going to be a small little breadcrumb of something that makes them think a little bit differently.
For all the things we were never taught but should have been.
At the end of the day, the most important person is yourself, and if you're not happy with your own choices, then you're never going to be happy.
Kia ora everyone, and welcome back to another episode and a special episode of the One Up Project today. We are going to be talking about the Diary of a CEO live show, and I'm here with one of my great friends, Jessica Lee Lawson. How are you today?
The full name. I'm great, Sarah Kelsey. Sarah Monique Kelsey, should I say.
Yes. We're in a really professional studio today.
Fancy.
In Bali. As most of you know, we've been travelling, and so we're making a quick pit stop through one of our favourite places, being Bali, of course. And they have a beautiful studio here, which we are lucky enough to get to record this episode on. So if you are listening, feel free to find the video somewhere. I don't have a YouTube channel, so I don't actually know where I'm going to put it. But you'll see the clips either on TikTok or Instagram, so keep your eye out there. Jess and I attended an event by Stephen Bartlett, who, if you don't know, hosts Diary of a CEO podcast. And it is one of our favourite podcasts ever. We constantly talk about it. We constantly ask if the other ones listen to the most recent episode. I was saying to Jess earlier that I think almost every episode I've listened to, I've then gone and read the book of the person who was talking, because I've always just loved Stephen's interview style. I think that he has such a natural thought and thoughtful approach to his interviewing. He's very curious, and a lot of alignment between him and the way that I really want to act on podcasts. So I really appreciate who he is, and we just had to go to the show. He was coming through Sydney, conveniently at the time that we were nowhere near Sydney, but we made the trip down anyway.
Yeah, we were North Queensland and we were going to Bali next, and he thought, you know what, we could just swing down to Bali.
Yeah,
I mean, not Bali, Sydney. We go could down also to Sydney there. Stay out, see Steve, and then head to Bali.
Yeah.
So we just had to swing by Sydney to see him.
Exactly, we had to.
And we were fangirling hardcore.
Absolutely.
Like, I've never fangirled so much. Like, I've seen Taylor Swift and this was very different.
I had to play Temple Run to calm down, but it was pretty ridiculous. I think it's like, I don't idolize many people, but Stephen Bartlett is someone I really admire and love his work and love his story and appreciate the way that he asks more of guests than just what they do, but who they are and why they are the way they are. And his show was going to be an extension of that line of curiosity, and I wanted to see what we could learn. And we've both read his book.
Yeah, and we were talking about this, I think, at the live show, where we were saying the way he has executed his personal brand and everything he does is just so clever. Like, the podcast is called A Diary of a CEO. The book is A Diary of a CEO, and it really is his diary. And the book covers so many different points from so many different other books and other people, and he just brings that all together as if it was his diary.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how it's just so clever in the way he's done it.
Yeah, the concepts aren't necessarily new.
No.
Like, I've read so many books in the past that cover these exact topics, and a lot of it, I assume, because he has had those exact guests on the podcast and has learned so much from them as well. But the real genius, I guess you could say, of this book is the fact that it is a culmination of all of the important, as he puts it, laws and foundations of both business and life. And if you're someone who is in business or does put a priority on your own self-development and your own personal development, you'll really enjoy that book, I think.
Yeah, for sure. As you can tell, we're big fans.
Yeah, so we had to start with that. But we basically want to use the show as like a base for this episode and discuss some of those laws and what our thoughts are. But first of all, Jess, I wanted to ask you, what's an episode of Diary of a CEO that you remember having a big impact on you?
There's so many that I could point out, and it's hard to remember the first one. But a key one that I do remember is the one with Dr. Amen. Where I just found that, I just really like his approach, how he actually scans the brain itself, because it makes so much sense when you think about it. Obviously, you would scan the brain if there is any neurological issues going on or anything psychological, of course you should scan the brain, because often you're not aware enough to know about what is actually going on to vocalize to, say, a therapist if you're seeing someone.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just really liked that episode, and I think that just made me think to always be thinking about what the root cause is and what's actually going on and the bigger picture.
Yeah, because if you've listened to a previous episode Jess and I did together, you would have heard about all of her own personal health challenges and how that has helped her develop into a much more resilient, I would say, version of yourself, plus so much more, obviously. But I can definitely see why that episode would resonate with you.
Yeah, for sure. It's always figuring out what's going on and how to address that, rather than putting a band-aid over it and then you're going to have to address it later on. It's like, just figure out what's going on right now. And that could go into so many things. It's not just health. That could go into business. And I think that could go into how he talks about being 1% better every day.
Mm.
And the Kaizen philosophy, like always just bettering everything and perfecting everything, so that way you're not going to have to redo that work down the track.
Mm. Prioritize your first foundation.
We love it. Sarah's been prioritizing her first foundation lately.
I've been on a health journey. I had a health epiphany, everyone. A health scare, some would say. I've been privileged to always be so incredibly lucky with my health. And recently I woke up one day and I couldn't move my neck literally at all. Guys,
her shoulder was like dropped. You have to put this photo somewhere.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, maybe I can put the photo up if I get all profesh with the editing. But I couldn't move and it was so painful. Like honestly, so, so, so painful. And I had no idea what to do about it. And basically, long story short, I think it was an old injury that had resurfaced as a result of never doing anything about it, because my shoulder was dropped massively, but my shoulder has always been dropped since I had this injury and I just never did anything about it because it wasn't painful enough. And I was reading that law from Stephen Butler's book at the same time, which was prioritize your first foundation being your health.
That's so ironic.
And I had this happen to me and I was like, that's it. I'm prioritizing health from now on.
So what
I
did Pilates this morning. When we got to Sydney, what was the first thing we did?
We went to a chiropractor.
And an x-ray to get to the root cause.
And an x-ray that I have now and I can't read. Although it says I have a disease and I don't know how to break that down. It said some disease identified. Anyway, I need to go to the doctor.
Address that.
I need to address that in time. So anyway, we're getting into it. Prioritizing our foundations. I don't know how we got onto that, but anyway.
Dr. Eamon going to root cause, but I'd love to know from you, what is the most memorable or first memorable episode that you've listened to?
Yeah, I can't even answer this question because I sent it to you and I didn't even think about it myself.
It's a hard question.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the first episode I listened to was the one with Molly May way back when. Like, I think this was 2021 that I listened to that, or 2022. But it's hard to remember, like, the most memorable or, like, the first time that you noticed.
Yeah, there's definitely a few that had some memorable impacts on me. Like, the ones that come to mind are... there was an episode with the ex-Nike CMO and an episode with Chris Voss, who wrote the book Never Split the Difference, which I have done an episode on. And it's basically about how to manipulate people to get what you want. But, you know, manipulation is a double-sided coin. Like, it can, manipulation can be inspiration just as much as it can be
using it as a tool.
Negative manipulation, yeah. Negotiation, everything, it all works into the same bucket. It's just about how you use it, really, and your intentions with using it. And I've read that book as well, and I think it's an incredible book. Jess is
I'm currently reading
it right now.
I'm about 8 pages in. I'm just not a great reader, and I should have just got the audiobook, but, you know, I'll persevere.
Yeah, I think it's a good book. And so, should we just jump into what we took from the live show? Any points stand out to you?
Well, I've got my notes here, Sarah.
Pull them up.
I actually did a reel and TikTok on this yesterday, and I tried to write down, so I took a lot of notes through the show, but I've pulled them down to 13 key takeaways.
Oh, okay, you're very organized. God, you should be hosting the show. I've got no organization.
You can have these if you want. I did a TikTok and a reel on this, and I took a lot of notes, but I tried to break them down into like my key takeaways.
We haven't really spoken about this, by the way, guys. We haven't really discussed it too much in depth since the show a week ago now.
Yeah.
Literally a week to the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't really discussed it too much in depth, I don't think.
Yeah, which we tried to purposefully do because we wanted to be fresh on here.
Yeah.
Because we knew would just vibe off the takeaways. Anyway, my first key takeaway, there's so many, but these are my top picks. And this one resonated to me a lot because it was something I was raised with and how I've always approached a lot of things. And it's break down the steps, then make them small and achievable. And lots of small steps over time will become one big step.
Mm.
And that really stood out to me because I always remember when I was younger, my mum would say to me, if it's all just too big and overwhelming and scary, just break it down to small steps. And that's something that I think I've carried through with a lot of things that I've done. Get a really clear idea on where you want to end up and then break down the steps of how you're going to get there. And it might be a 1-year thing, it might be a 10-year thing or a 50-year thing. But break down the steps so it's small and achievable. And then over time, that will become one greater thing.
Mm.
And I really liked that one. Do you remember him talking about that part?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one of those ones, you know, that's so obvious. Like, we all know that in order to get a big task done, break it down into smaller steps and you'll feel more motivated. But I think the way that he explained it was, it really helped ingrain it in our minds.
Mm.
And also just constantly reminding yourself that, yeah, your goals might be lofty and they might be huge and they might seem unrealistic, but it doesn't mean that they can't be achieved, and it doesn't mean not taking big leaps means you're unsuccessful. Like, taking any small step you make, any progress you make is worthwhile and is important. I think he also said something on that in the book around like how to almost manipulate your own motivations, because, and you can also use this in marketing, like, these are laws you could use towards another person or towards yourself from a motivation point of view. So something else he said was that the closer someone is to what they think is achieving the goal, the more likely they are to continue to be motivated to do the thing. And it doesn't actually matter how close you are to the reward, but it's how close you perceive you are to the reward. You can alter that perception by breaking down big tasks into small tasks.
Mm.
So you're almost like manipulating yourself in a way to continue to be motivated towards whatever it is you want, because we know that motivation is fleeting, and we can all try our hardest to be disciplined and do that as much as we want. But often we need to put measures in place that allow us to be more motivated.
Yeah, and a good reminder that if it all just does seem a bit too big and like, how the hell are we going to achieve this thing? Just break it down and be like, okay, cool, what's the first thing we need to focus on? And write it down, make a map. You've seen my map that I had, that I made a couple of years ago, and it's just like this ever-evolving thing that you're working on. Oh, you'll like this one. Well, of course you will. You like it all. Find out what you're good at. The world does not reward all-rounders, like, outsource. And that's definitely something that I've been working on the last year. I feel like something that you'll be working on soon. That kind of ties in with the other law that he spoke about, is asking who, not how.
Mm.
And it's like, figure out what you're good at and stick to that, and then figure out how you're going to outsource the other things. And it doesn't have to be a financial thing. Like, you don't have to pay someone. Get creative, find another way to do that. Whether you bring in a co-founder, go to someone and say, hey, I've got this idea. What are your thoughts? Keen to do this with me? There'll be money down the track, but you're going to have to work for it, just like I'm going to have to, and see the end goal.
He tried to explain this with a comedy skit from Jimmy Carr, I think it was.
Yeah.
He explained it really well, actually. So Jimmy Carr was on an episode of Diary of a CEO, and he was saying that, well, you need to focus more on what you're good at. Because if you're in school and you're good at English, keep doing English. Keep being in that class. If you're getting a D or you're failing physics, drop that class and focus on English. Because the one thing the world doesn't need is someone who's shit at physics.
Yeah.
And it was so true. And I remember being in high school and thinking, like, why do I need to focus on my weaknesses? I literally remember, like, consciously thinking that. Why do I need to focus on my weaknesses? Why can't I just focus on my strengths? Like, why do I have to be a jack of all trades? And I think that that was something that really frustrated me growing up and actually caused a lot of, like, mental upset and confusion around who I was in this world, because I was constantly, like, just okay at everything. I was never amazing at any one thing. Like, I was never the mathematician. I was never, like, the writer. I was never the creative designer. I was never the, like, unique, different thinker. Like, I was never anything, really. And that would upset me because I felt like the world was telling me I needed to be an all-rounder, yet I was getting nowhere for it. I think that's more just a reflection of the world we live in. Like, we continue doing things that make no sense because that's always been the status quo, and it's hard to disrupt an industry or a space that has existed, or a process or a system that has existed for years and years and years and years. And that we don't just see that in education, but we see that in almost every area of our world where things are completely outdated. And that's a big part of my own development, is like, how are we building solutions that actually make change and don't uphold the status quo?
Yeah, not being dinosaurs.
Not being dinosaurs, but also thinking like practically about what is actually going to help people and not wasting people's time.
Something I often think back to when Stephen Bartlett was talking about that at the live show, I was thinking about how in high school I was not an academic kid at all, and I was not good at math, I was not good at science, not good at English, none of that, but I was a creative. I loved art, I loved photography, and I remember dropping science and math as soon as I could. And I had friends at the time saying, why are you dropping that? You're going to need that for university. But I remember saying to them, I'm not going to need this for a degree, because if I need this for a degree, it's not the right one for me.
Why do you think that you felt no pressure to continue on with the classes that you, in air quotes, should have been doing?
It probably goes back to childhood, where I was very fortunate that I was always encouraged to pursue what I was passionate about, which is actually something really funny realizing right now, thinking about everything that I do to this day in my work. But I was very lucky that I remember if I was showed interest in painting or crafts, my parents stuck paint and paintbrushes in front of me just to allow me to have fun and be creative and just learn if I liked that. And like my brother, he was very much into 3D stuff and learning how things worked. So my parents got a old computer, put it on a tarp for him on the floor in the lounge room, and said, here you go, pull it apart, figure it out. And now he's working on helicopters at the age of 23. So I think it's being nurtured from childhood, which is just a massive privilege to have that, which allowed me to have that confidence and stubbornness in a way through high school.
And that belief that that was okay to do that, because I think when you're not, when you or your family or your surroundings aren't under the pressure to stick to a status quo because of whatever possible reason, you do then have that freedom of exploration and exploring your feelings and your wants and desires and dreams. So what are some other laws that you think will help you now on this journey of living life aligned to the way that you want?
I don't know if we've touched on it, but the 1% better every day, like that constant pursuit to always working towards your why and making sure you're bringing that through everything that you do. Like in the last month, I realized that I was working for the dollar. I wasn't working towards my passion and my why, which was a really, really good wake up call. And so now I'm working on a project that is in alignment with my why, which is to connect, inspire, and educate lifestyle founders, people who want to create a life for themselves, create a space where hopefully these people, by encouraging them and creating a safe space for these people, have a butterfly effect themselves to those who may not have that freedom from those early days in your upbringing.
What's the butterfly effect again, for those that don't know?
Butterfly effect, which is actually something that Stephen Bartlett talked about, which is quite funny because we were talking about it earlier in the day, I think, before we went to the event. But it's basically, for example, right now you and I are recording this episode, someone might watch it and take a key takeaway from it and then go tell their friend. So Jackie's listened to this, she's going to tell Adam. I don't know where I got those names from. Don't know any Jackies or Adams. And then all of a sudden Adam's like, oh shit, yeah, I must listen to that episode, so he might come back to this and then go and start a business or something, or implement that in some way. And it's just this butterfly effect where one action now could affect 10 different people down the line. kind of like the 2 degrees of separation thing.
You're dropping breadcrumbs for other people to pick up and absorb into their own lives and own work and whatever it is that is meaningful to them.
Absolutely. And I guess that's what One Up Project is, isn't it?
Definitely trying to be, for sure.
I'm excited for this new direction and the butterfly effects that you will have with it. Have you spoken about the new direction yet?
Kind of.
Like on the potty?
Not really, because I think if you listen, like, more often than not, you'll probably have already sensed it. And I was actually reviewing my earliest episodes the other day because I was trying to think of what solo episodes I could kind of redo and update moving forward. And I noticed that actually a lot of them weren't financial literacy related, even at the start. And I think I had it in my head that every episode was about money, and so now that not every episode is about money, although convenient if you've listened to, when you're listening to this episode, the last four are actually about money, but for the most part they're not anymore. And I think a lot of me has felt guilty about that because, you know, you kind of build up this brand and perception as giving information and access in an area, in one type of area, but then you evolve over time and you want to change and you're like, oh, are people going to like that anymore? But essentially, if you don't know or just listen to the episodes and don't really question what they're about, which, love those kind of people, to be honest. The main direction of One Up is to open doors to conversations that have previously not been heard or have been inaccessible to people. And that's because throughout this podcast, I have learnt the barriers. I've learnt of some of the barriers to information in a very diverse range of areas of life. Like, it's not just finance, because ultimately to understand your personal finances, you have to understand yourself. And to understand yourself, you need to have the time, space, and capacity to actually be able to invest in your own life. And most people are too busy trying to survive and trying to thrive within a cost of living crisis or a recession that they're not able to focus on themselves. They're not able to look forward at the future. They don't have the capacity to believe in something better than the situation they're in right now, or even believe in themselves, because they're just focused on being reactive rather than proactive. And I don't think that is the fault of anyone. I think that is actually just a result of the society and the world we live in, and a lot of those things need to change. And I hope that the podcast can go down a direction where I'm continuing to learn as much about that as I can, and then building solutions outside of that, whether that's in the work that I do in my career or a business I start or the way the podcast progresses, that can help contribute to those problems in a way that is actually meaningful, not in a way that contributes to the side effects of the problem, but to the root of the problem itself. And so people like Stephen Bartlett and I guess Diary of a CEO are inspiring in that way, because I think that they bring on the people who are in many ways doing that and contributing to that. And that gives me a lot of ideas.
Well, that brings it through nicely, because I wanted to ask you a question.
Yeah.
From the show, what was one of your key takeaways that inspired you to help with this issue and how you're going to open these doors?
I don't know if there was one, honestly. Like,
just all of them overall kind of
thing? Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the show itself and the book itself is quite individualistic in the way that it's more focused on the independent person. What are you doing to change your mindset? Like, what are you doing to progress? Whereas that direction I'm thinking about is more from a community perspective, like, how are we building those solutions at scale? Are we empowering a group of people, and enabling probably is a better word, a group of people to access those solutions? I think focusing on yourself and the individual is important, but coming back to my original point, not everyone has the space and capacity to be able to do that. So I think what this show really helped me with was more understanding more about myself and how to put myself in a position where I'm able to do that more effectively. Like, one of the most important takeaways in my head, this is probably the most memorable and most impactful thing that he said in the show for me, which was, find rare and complementary skill sets that will set you apart in your industry. What thing are you doing that seems completely unrelated from another thing that you're doing, but actually helps so much? For me, I think when I'm in a role and I'm communicating with other people, or I'm trying to understand the needs of a customer to market to them correctly because I work in marketing, the skills I've built through 1UP with interviewing, with trying to get to the root of how someone feels, with trying to get someone to open up, building trust, all of those things contribute to my ability to do that well, and in so many other areas of my life too. But I want to double down on my interviewing skills, on my listening skills, on my empathy skills, on my curiosity skills, all of those things I want to double down on. And so I'm trying to think of, like, what are the rare and complementary skill sets that exist outside of that that can help me progress on that journey and set you apart, especially now that I'm in a position where I'm trying to land my next role, I guess, in a space, in a region, like in Europe or the UK. I've never been before. I don't have a network. Like, how am I going to do that?
If there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah. And another thing Stephen Butler talks about in the book is plan A thinking. Like, we don't have plan Bs.
Well, that's been our motto for the last month.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I really need to get clear on, like, how I'm going to push forward with that plan A, because I don't have a plan B.
Well, I feel like for you, if you're trying to go into product marketing and you really dive into who the customer is that you're creating the product for, the skills that you just outlined before that you've learned through doing the podcast and that you continue to learn and upskill yourself in, especially your empathy that you have for people and show people, your listening skills, your curiosity skills, that's going to come through in that work. So what you've done through the podcast is that rare and complementary skill to product marketing, or at the moment marketing, where you can use those skills to understand the customer.
In all honesty though, I feel like those are skills that you already need to do that job anyway. Or you should have. Not everyone does have them, but I think, you know? And so I'm thinking, like, what sits outside of that that I can bring that's unique? Not from a competition perspective, but more from, like, a perspective perspective. Like, what actually unique value can I bring to a team to create better solutions or to make more meaningful contributions? Because that is going to be the thing that helps move the needle on the problems I want to solve. Like, for me, it's not about how can I be the best at work and, like, show off my skills and get a pay rise. Like, that just isn't how I'm motivated. For me, it's like, how am I actually contributing to something? So that's what I'm thinking about when I think rare and complementary skill sets. And I don't know, maybe I've just bypassed something completely, or maybe I need to start a new hobby, I don't know. But I thought it was something interesting to think about.
Well, I feel like that's the kind of thing where you can lean into your current interests of what do you naturally have interest in. Like, I remember when he was speaking about this, I was thinking, I have a passion for food. Would you believe it? Love food. But then also understanding the nutrition side of it, I was like, well, that's something I could dive into just because I naturally have that interest in it. So, like, what's something that you naturally have an interest in that isn't what you're currently doing or a space that you're currently working in?
Something else that I found really helpful that he had spoken about was paint the back of the fence, the concept of painting the back of the fence. Yep. So painting the back of the fence essentially means that you are doing the thing that contributes to the end result, but that possibly no one will see or notice or care about or congratulate you for or thank you for. You're doing the thing that is unnoticed, that isn't seen, because that is the standard you hold yourself to and because that is the right thing to do, not because you should do it or you have to do it or you're doing it for any kind of gain.
Yeah, it's because you know that the back of the fence is painted.
Exactly.
You're not doing it for anyone. You're not doing it for praise. You're doing it because you know you've done a complete well done job.
And all of that was to say, don't cheat yourself by not painting the back of the fence. And it came from an anecdote from Will Smith in his childhood, where basically he was building, oh no, that was a brick wall. There was someone else building a fence. Maybe it was Steve Jobs or someone like that. Anyway, there was an anecdote about two people building a fence, and their dad had come out to them and said, don't forget to paint the back of the fence. And they said, why? No one's going to see it. Why does it matter? And then the dad said, well, because you'll know. you'll know that the back of the fence was painted and it'll look good to you and it'll be important to you. And yeah, that concept was basically about making sure that, again, you focus on the little details and sweat the small stuff, which is another thing that was talked about a lot, which I've previously not agreed with, because I often felt like in a career, if you're sweating the small stuff all the time, you're stressing out your team. And that was always, I was like, don't sweat the small, like, sweating the small stuff is micromanagement. That's what I had always kind of linked that to. But actually it was more about being particular about the little details. Well, as you said earlier, all contribute little steps to a much bigger vision. And so it is important to take care of the little things in order to make the bigger picture that much greater.
Yeah, and that was something that I remember reading that part in the book. And I remember reading the title of the law and I thought, okay, this is one thing that I don't fully agree on, but I'll read it to challenge my thinking because I'm sure there's a reason he's saying it.
Were you going to skip over that?
Not skip over it, but I didn't fully agree with it and just kind of skim read it and be like, oh yeah, yeah, sure.
Right.
Because at that point, I did believe that don't sweat the small things and just get the job done. And it's something that I naturally prefer to do, is just get the job done. And I'm not very detail orientated, which is hilarious with my design background where you have to be extremely detailed. But I like to just get the job done. And so I read that chapter in the book. I thought, oh yeah, okay, whatever. And I kind of just moved past it and didn't think too much about it. But then he spoke about it again at the show. And that was where it actually solidified my thinking of, no, I actually do agree with this, because it ties in with the 1% better, the Kaizen philosophy, which when I read, I think that was in his book, The Kaizen Philosophy, where I learned about it. And I 100% agreed with that and loved that idea. I was like, okay, yeah, that actually connected. You do have to sweat the small things, because that's going to create, if you don't address the small things now, that's going to create a bigger issue. And I guess that's going back to the root cause. If you don't address it now, it's going to be a bigger issue to deal with later. So just sweat the small things, get the job done right now, correctly now, and then you know that the back of the fence is painted.
Like my shoulder injury. I should have just sorted it at the time. But well, here
you,
we are.
You tried to. You went to the chiropractor for a few years.
I went to the physio.
Oh, physio, sorry.
But yeah.
You're addressing it now.
I completely agree with the sentiment of sweating the small stuff now. And we're coming near the end of this episode, but one more thing that I wanted to touch on was the importance of experimentation and upping your failure rate. Because especially now, I did a post the other day and I spoke about how I'm no longer taking risks. I'm experimenting. And
oh,
I'm replacing every time I say I'm taking a risk with I'm just experimenting, because it feels a lot less serious.
And it removes the pressure from yourself.
Yeah, and it feels a lot less final
because
I'm able to just say I'm just experimenting. I'm just testing it out. There's nothing wrong with making a huge life-altering change because I'm just experimenting. And the more you increase your failure rate, the higher the chance is of you reaching success.
And I love that, because the idea of taking a risk, especially if you say that publicly or to friends and family, they're like, oh yeah, cool, is it going to work? And it's like, it's either going to work or it's not going to work. And the failure side of it is deemed as a bad thing. Whereas I like the idea of reframing it to, no, I'm experimenting, because then it's like a either sick that worked or oops, oh well, you tried, what's the next thing?
Yeah.
So it's just reframing the idea around it, which I love, especially for what you and I are both doing this year, where we're really just, right now we've got 3 weeks planned, no idea what country we'll be in next. It's like we're just experimenting. At one point we might have to end up on a flight back home or do something you didn't think you were going to have to do, but it's just by experimenting and figuring it out and trying, just giving it a shot.
Oh yeah, we're doing a lot of experimenting, all right. I'm getting sick of all this experimenting.
I would love to have like 3 months planned just to know what country. Now, where are you going to be based?
Yeah. And granted, we choose to take these risks.
And yeah, and I would much rather this than to be somewhere where I was bored and, you know, just going about everyday life where that just does not fulfill me at this point in my life. Like, I need this right now. Mm. And I know at some point I'm going to want to not be living at this high rate. And it's ironic because you and I both were like, yep, we both want to settle down before we left out on this big
literally
trip.
Literally 2 weeks before we left, we were both like, yeah, keen to like have a base and not really be moving around. Yet here we are.
Literally. And I've never wanted that. So it's ironic that that's what I was feeling the week before leaving.
Mm.
But, you know. Oh, one other thing I wanted to touch on was lean into the bizarre.
Mm, I love that.
Wasn't that a good one?
Always doing
lean
that.
Into the bizarre. Like, in 1994, he spoke about how the internet sounded bizarre then. And I mean, look at it now.
Mm.
No one could be listening to this if it weren't for the internet. And back then, people saying, yeah, what the hell is that thing? Like, nah, not keen.
Yeah. He was comparing it to AI and how we talk about it now. We're like, oh, that robot thing. Yeah, and back in the day, they were talking about internet like that as well.
And being shut off with it.
To close off this episode, could you tell us what is a business or life law that you think is fundamental?
Life's not going to change if you just sit there and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want change, if you want a different life for yourself, you're going to have to get up and do it yourself because no one's going to do it for you. And so that's something that I live by every day, that if I want change, if I want to do something different because I don't want to live a standard life for myself, I know that I'm going to have to do that and make that change myself. So that's something that I live by. I think that's the one I want to share, but I feel like there's a better one.
No, that's great. I think if that resonates with you, then that's what's important to share with the people, right?
That's the first one that comes to mind. I had, like, when I started Collectively, my business, back in 2018, the first thing I ever did was Prince Collection, and that was one of the quotes that I had on a print, and I think it's just always stuck with me for some reason. What about you?
Take risks, be curious. There are two things my podcast guests always say, and it is those two things. It doesn't matter whether the risk is going out to dinner alone or trying a new hobby for the first time or stepping outside when you've been cooped up at home and you don't want to socialize. Any sort of risk you take is going to contribute to your growth and your resilience. And so continuing to take risks in whatever way is safe but also a little scary to you is important. Be curious. There's so many things wrapped up in being curious. It means to be empathetic. It means to be open-minded. It means to lean into the bizarre. It means to never make assumptions about other people. Acknowledge that your lived experience isn't the only one that exists. To find the value in perspectives that completely contrast your own. And if you can do that, I think you'll end up actually taking so much more from people and from life itself and be able to view the world in a lot more colour than you have ever been able to before. Thank you everyone for listening to this episode of the One Up Project. I think it was a bit all over the show, to be honest, but
that's just how our conversations go,
yeah, exactly. And I think it was important to do like a little review of our thoughts,
and they trigger a lot of thoughts as well,
yeah,
and things that we're always talking about.
And if you weren't able to go to the show, then hopefully this provided an insight into some of the things that we took from it. And if you are able to read the book at any stage and this is the kind of world that you're interested in, then I think it would be well worth it as well.
Highly recommend, because it covers not just business, but it could apply across business, life, an interest that you have, a hobby, literally anything. It covers like the laws and principles that you could apply to anything.
Mm.
So it's really for everyone.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Thank you for coming on, Jess. I really appreciate your time always. Not that we don't spend enough together.
Now I'm going to get your BTS of your next episodes. I'm just okay. Your PA at this point, but it's okay.
Appreciate you. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The One Up Project. If you want to find more stuff just like this, check out our other apps or follow us at The One Up Project on Instagram or TikTok. See you there.